I'm Cape.
And I'm Drew.
We're just two former student athletes who understand the game.
Not just on the court.
But in life.
At the end of the day, we just want to help.
Today's athletes and former just trying to find their way.
It's bigger than sports.
This is the Cape and Drew Podcast, the real TikTok. What's up, everybody? I'm Cape.
I'm Drew.
We have a very, very special guest with us today. You know, it's amazing how stuff kind of comes full circle. We're going to get into it a little later, but grew up watching this dude, North Carolina legend. Literally grew up watching him on VHS tape, showing my age a little bit. You know, he was...
And mine, too.
Yeah, yours, too. He was one of the best guards to come through the ACC. I particularly followed him because he was a lefty. Drew's a lefty, too, and so I stole a lot of your moves. But, I mean, literally from Fayetteville to Rayford Road, County Line, Hope County,
oh, man.
All of that, man. We're very lucky to have this guy today. Mr. Terrell McIntyre, how you doing, man?
Man, doing well, man. Thank you guys for having me, man. Been watching you guys, man. Y'all keep it up, man. Really doing well, and happy to be on, man.
We appreciate it.
It's crazy. I didn't get a chance to text Kate this, but about like at 4:30, I was like, "Yo, we really about to have Terrell McIntyre on." we legit grew up like, you know, we North Carolina, so we rock with Carolina, but we always knew like, yeah, man, they got to play at Clemson. I don't know, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It's a difference. It's a difference, you know. What's crazy, you know, North Carolina. I grew up a North Carolina fan, so I already know how it go. You know, I was North Carolina my whole life until I got to Clemson. Then everything changed.
I'm gonna tell you what Drew said to me the other day. He was like, because we grew up watching Clemson, like we said, but Drew was like, yo, T-Mac was like, I mean, there was a couple guys on the team, but T-Mac was the cool one. He was the sweet one. He was like, because y'all had a bunch of big dudes on your team that would, I just remember everybody being swole, man.
Hey, creatine every day. Hey, Rick Barnes. Hey, if you gave up a layup, if you gave up a shot in the paint and didn't foul, he let you have it. So it was them Detroit bad boy Piston days. That's how we played. Like
everybody was swole. Y'all, that one dude on your team, Jameson.
Harold Jameson. Yeah, the big old man.
Prison body.
Man, it was crazy. He wasn't like that when he first got in. You know, we both came in kind of a little chunky, you know, stocky. But then it seemed like he got cut up in like 3 weeks. We like, dang, you was just chunky. Now you like, no, like 4% body fat, like something ridiculous on a 6'8", 260 frame with like 5% body fat. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. I'm just remembering now, like, all them games. It's just crazy, man. Like, again, it's an honor to have you on. So, you know, the first thing we like to ask people, man, is just, you know, how's everything going for you right now? The world, man, it's kind of like about to turn upside down, but we just kind of want to check in with everybody to see how they're doing right now, man. Like, how's everything going with you?
Man, given the circumstances that we're in right now, man, I can't really complain with personally, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, health is good, better, family good, the job, the boys working hard here, you know, so... Personally, it's pretty good, but you know, as we know, the world is in turmoil right now.
Mm. Yeah,
I was gonna say, Cape and I touched on it too, man. We was like, hey, man, y'all got the poster boy down there that got it. If it don't go right with him, they about to shut big down.
hey, when he get it, it's like, hold up now. Are we going to shut the school down or what?
No, you know? he got it, and I saw that, and it sucks, man, that they talking about how he's not the front runner for the Heisman anymore, because I guess he's going to miss this weekend, too. And I'm like, that's tough, man. That's just a tough
man, I don't really know him like that. I mean, obviously in passing, being in athletics, but he's not that kind of dude that's even worrying about that. You know what I'm saying? Like, real humble, down-to-earth guy, man. That's not even on his radar like that. So he's not even tripping. He just want to win a natty. Mm.
That's what's up. And it looked like y'all smacking people in the mouth like crazy. It looked like that ain't going to be a problem.
man, it'll be tough this week, you know, but, you know, I don't think it'll hurt our chances too much whichever way the game go, just for the simple fact that he's not on the field. You know, it's hard to judge us when he's not playing.
Who y'all got this weekend?
Notre Dame.
We got Notre Dame. It's a big one.
Oh.
But, hey, the freshman ain't no slouch. Now, DJ, he next. He up next. Man. He about to show what he can do. You know, all the rave reviews he's getting. You know, he's a big dude, man.
He's 6'5", 260?
240? 6'5", 250. 6'5",
250. Legit. Wow. So, let's kind of take it back to the beginning. Obviously, we got some roots together, being from Fayetteville, North Carolina, Rayford, North Carolina. I actually live right there on the county line in Tunbridge. So, I used to get my hair cut right there.
Right at the county line. Everybody, if you can get your hair cut at the county line, you was doing something. Like, you know, if you can get your hair cut there, you probably had like one of the freshest cuts in the city.
I had a dope fade, dog. Me and my brother down there. But how did it all start for you, man? Like when did you like pick up a basketball and when did you know you were good?
Man, you know what? Well, I was young, man. Really, I was into all sports. You know, I was probably better. Basketball, really, growing up, was probably my third best sport. You know, I really was a baseball player, number one. That was my first sport that people kind of knew, like, you know, he an athlete, you know, playing Little League and T-ball. So baseball was really my first sport that I really excelled in. And then just in the neighborhood playing football and all that in the grass with older people.
Yeah.
But it was basketball that kind of intrigued me at a young age. Like, I probably was like 7 or 8. I always played, but I was like 7 or 8. And my big cousin Stacy and all our friends in the neighborhood on the Hill, that was our neighborhood called the Hill, the caution light right there in Rayford. And they would never let me play. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, hold up. Like, they wouldn't ever let me play. And then finally, my cousin was like, he picked me one day. Mm. Out of the blue, he picked me. And what's crazy is we had a Yorker. We all lived in the same house. My cousins, like my aunt, it was like probably 10 of us in the crib, man. My grandmother. So we had the basketball goal in our backyard. So everybody in the neighborhood came to our house to play basketball at first.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm out there just watching at my yard and I can't even play. You know, yeah. I'm probably 7 or 8 and they probably 12. You know, they probably 4 or 5 years older than me. They probably 12, and I'm probably 8, you know, somewhere in there, give or take. But they wouldn't let me play. But then when he finally let me play, I held my own. And from that day on, they picked me up, you know. And that was really the confidence, like, you know what, I could play. Because I always was the smallest one on the court. So, you know, that didn't matter. But you know, I was athletic, and I just had an instinct. I just knew how to play because all I did was watch sports. That's
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
I had no other interest growing up.
Likewise.
When they picked you up, right, first walking on the court, did you feel like you was, like, about to walk into, like, NBA game as far as, like, the intensity that you knew that you had to bring because, like, they gave you a shot, so I got to deliver?
Nah, you know back then, like, they talking, like, if you ain't doing what you're supposed to do, they talking trash to you. Like, they let you know what you need to be doing, what you're not doing. So, the first time, I actually was nervous, and a little like, oh, man, they picked me up. Like, I was in shock, but I was nervous, you know. But after a while, they started helping me with stuff. Like, they actually, you know, before trainers and all that, like, they was actually trying to help me because they saw the potential.
Yeah,
you know, and they saw the heart. I didn't back down from nobody.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that you had a lot of cousins and like 10, 12. Though I feel like I played against a cousin of yours every school. Like Pernell Sweat, there was this dude, and you verified now, this is this dude that looked like you. They said he was your cousin. He was nice, though. He was real nice, but he played Pernell Sweat. That was your people, too?
Man, you know how it go. You got the same lane. You got affiliation. You cousins somewhere. You know, I might not know him. I didn't know him till I got there.
Yeah.
You know, but I knew people even in Lumberton. And I'm like, man, I didn't know him, but
yeah,
not sure who it was. But Yeah. Cousins everywhere. You know how it go. Everybody your cousin.
I know.
And when you're in the country, when you coming up in the country and you got a last name, oh, that's my cousin.
Yep. Absolutely.
Not knowing how you even affiliated.
Nah, he was nice though. So I mean, we was like, okay, he was. Hey, did you ever grow up playing on Fort Bragg at all? Did you go on base sometimes to play?
Nah, I didn't go on Bragg. Okay. I didn't go on Bragg. We when I got a little older, we went to Felver State a little bit and we played on Bunch Road a little bit.
Okay. Yeah.
So when you were coming up, right, and probably around high school, I feel like every kid, they really start feeling they in their bag, right? So what schools were recruiting you, and like what made you go to Clemson?
Nah, actually, my story is a little different because I was getting recruited. Actually, I was getting recruited in football and basketball. So I was getting like low majors, like, you know what I'm saying? Like A&T wanted me to play both sports. I was getting recruited by mid majors, to be honest with you, early, you know, and my high school coach, we was going to UNC Wilmington camp every summer when I was in ninth grade. Because in eighth grade, when I knew I was good, because when I was in eighth grade, all the people I'm telling you about that I played when I was younger, they was in like 10th grade, so they was playing JV. So I would practice at my junior high team in eighth grade, and I stayed right across the street from the high school. So I get home about 5:30, I rush over to the high school, and my mentor now, you know, rest in peace, but he, Elgin Blue, he would let me get in practice with the JV team. And I should have been on the team the way I was playing. Like, because I knew all the dudes and I knew, you know, them my boys, I love them, but I knew I was better than them.
Right.
When it comes to sports, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I'm like, oh yeah, I know I could play with them. So, you know, a couple of times the varsity coach came in and saw me practicing. So as soon as my eighth grade year was over and we was going into the summer, he was like, hey, I want you to play with us. That's when they had the state games and all that in the summer. So my team, he put me on the team going into my ninth grade year on the state game team with all varsity players. So I was end up playing in that and playing okay. You know, he was a hard-nosed coach, playing okay. And then he was like, hey, I want you to play on the varsity team. So I knew going into my freshman year that I was going to be on the varsity team playing basketball.
Wow. Yeah, we didn't play varsity night.
Nah.
You know, 71st, you remember how 71st used to get down back in
the day. Man, 71st, they had everybody, man. Like, yes. 71st really was like high school North Carolina is like Duke and North Carolina in our area.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? They got all the cats that came from military or they grew up there, and they had – every year they had D1, two or three D1 players, and then they graduate, and then the ones that was on the bench was D1 players. Like,
you played against the Stevenson brothers, didn't you? Did you play against the
Stevenson brothers? Yeah. Stevenson brothers, Larry Morrissey, Ron Anderson, Suleiman. Like, it was a lot of guys. Chavis Rachel. They kept bringing them in, man. And Gerard, me and Gerard actually played AAU together, and Greg too.
Okay.
I played AAU with Fayetteville.
Yeah, you didn't play against Jeff though, right? You didn't play against Jeff when he was at Southview. At Southview?
Yeah. Jeff was the first dude that let me know I had a lot of work to do. if I wanted to be good. Yo, we played Southview. So Jeff was a senior and I was a freshman. I mean, he was a junior, I was a freshman, but my sophomore year was the year where he was a senior. And that's the year he was like, man, in our area, like, as soon as the game over, like, all our fans, our students going, running up to Jeff, getting autographs. He was like Jordan, really, in the area. You know what I'm saying? People don't realize how good Jeff Cable was in high school.
T-Mac, like, I don't mean to cut you off, but I be telling Drew, I be like, yo, I remember being a kid now because it was like, I remember you from Hope. I remember Anquil E. Smith. I remember 71st. You remember Anquil McCullum from E. Smith?
Yeah. Anquil McCullum,
And I used to tell, I'd be telling Drew, I'd be like, yo, if things were like they were back then, guys going straight out of high school, Jeff would have went out of high school, yo. Like he was that. Mm. He was like that around town like that. Or he would have like.
I know a car room.
Huh?
My bad, a car rolled by, but Jeff was that dude. If Jeff was in, I think it was just the wrong era for Jeff. I don't know. To me, I mean, he went to Duke, but his style of play wasn't
Duke. Like, nah.
To be a point guard at 6'5", that was the first time I had seen that in person. You know what I'm saying? I had seen somebody that athletic. Because people don't realize how athletic Jeff was in high school. You know, he didn't play the same way in college. He was more of a setup guy, and you know, he scored a little bit. He did his thing, but in high school, Jeff was unreal, man. Yeah, I remember playing him, and you know, me young and naive sophomore, I hit a basket or two on him, and I said something to him.
Oh,
I said something to him, and I don't know what happened because Coach Cable was at the game. That big deal. He was at the game, and Coach Cable like gave him some gum or something, and he just snapped. Like he probably hit like 20 straight points after that. Like coming down the lane, taking off, dunking on the break, dunking. Like it got to a point. Like our crowd is a rough crowd in Rafer, small gym. Hope got a rough crowd. Mm-hmm. Dog, they was in all jail because they had never seen nothing like it.
Yeah, the legend goes, man. And me and Drew was just talking about this, like the best players that come through that area. And I'd be like, yo, I know Dennis Smith Jr. made it to the league. I know. I know Eric Maynor made it to the league. I know. I know, you know. But, and you know, Jeff, my people, that's my cousin. And I, you know, I remember seeing some of that stuff he did in high school, man. And the stuff.
Jeff, to me, out of all the people you name, you know, all them guys can hoop, deserved everything they got. You know, Jeff probably the best high school player from my area that I know.
Agree. And that's saying a lot coming from you. See, so
there's a lot of hoopers in our area that came up, that went D1, some went pro, some didn't.
Yeah.
But the people who really know basketball and who play basketball, the ones that know Jeff was probably – one of the best high school players he is the best high school player from my era that I know.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. So I know we got a little sidetrack. So you said you had a different story. So was Clemson, what other school? You said some low majors, some mid majors.
Yeah, so UNC Wilmington was my first offer. Okay. We went to camp. That's why we got sidetracked, but we used to go to camp there every year.
Yeah.
And so they kind of knew my game, knew what I was. And the reason he offered me a scholarship, at the end of the game, I think we was down probably two. I came down. Everybody was expecting me to shoot. They came and ran somebody at me, and I kicked it to an open man. He shot the three for the game winner. Okay. So he offered me a scholarship right then because he was like, even though – you the man on the team, everybody know you gonna score all the points or try to, you know, be the man at the end of the game. You made the right play at the end of the game. So that kind of got the ball rolling. You know, I actually visited James Madison, you know. I visited James Madison, but it wasn't till like probably the middle, not even the middle, probably about after Christmas, early January of my senior year that I started getting like Oklahoma, NC State, Wake Forest was coming. Then Clemson came. Clemson was actually the last team. NC State was the first high major to come because they was at the game. And the reason I didn't go to NC State, to be honest, they was at my game, and I had 51 points.
51?
51. I had 51. And they were still acting the same, like that was normal. You know what I'm saying? Like
they weren't impressed.
Yeah, like they wasn't like they ain't turn up the notch in the recruiting. They ain't turn up the heat in the recruiting process. Like I was a little disappointed in that. So I didn't even take an official there. I took a couple unofficials to NC State, you know, because it was so close. I didn't really want to waste an official visit going to NC State when I could just ride up the street and be there on a Saturday, go to a practice, watch a game, like. Mm-hmm. I didn't think I feel a need to take a visit official to NC State. But I kind of knew then that, I wasn't going to go there. And Oklahoma was a real possibility. Kelvin Sampson, he's from the area. He's from actually like Parnell Sweat, Lumberton area.
Yep.
And he took an official there. So really, I was thinking about that, and then my stepfather got killed at work. Mm. So that kind of really X'd them out. I didn't want to leave my mom, so I knew I was going to be somewhere in driving distance for her. And then Clemson came late, man, and then one thing that kind of drove me to Clemson, I never visited Clemson or anything when I committed because I had hurt my ankle in the conference championship tournament. And they had me to work out. They came and watched me work out prior, like, 3 or 4 days later, and I was limping through the workout. And he was like, anybody that's going to fight through this kind of workout and show toughness like that is somebody I want to coach. And then Rick Barnes didn't promise me nothing. He was like, hey, it's minutes out there. You know, I'm not going to say you're going to start. You know, you probably not. But it is minutes out there you can earn to play and make a name for yourself. So I was intrigued by that because I was always an underdog and I had an underdog mentality. So, for one, I always wanted to play in the ACC and it just felt like a good fit for me.
Yeah. So we all know ACC is like unbelievably tough, competitive. I mean, me and Drew wanted to play in the ACC too. We wanted to go to Carolina too. And you know, we know how real it is and how tough it is. Like we say, we grew up watching in you, Randolph Childress, you know, Jeff, G Hill. I mean, we like real ACC fans. So you get to Clemson in 1995, right?
Yep.
How was it though? Because as you talked about, and we know this, you 5'9". I know they used to list you as 6 foot at Clemson, but I know you about 5'9", 5'10".
Nah, they used to give me like 5'10" early. Then I told them what's crazy. I told them to put my regular height. I didn't want them to up my height. Yeah. They wanted to put me 5'10", because they had me like 5'11" in high school. 5'11". I don't know where near 5'11", man. I'm 5'9", man, and I told him like, nah, put me 5'9", put my regular size, you know what I'm saying? Cause, you know, Muzzy Bowe, somebody I looked up to, but Damon Stoudemire and Travis Best is who I patterned my game after. You know, and they were small, so I, like you said, you took my moves. I took all their moves. Like I used to watch. I remember watching, like, if. For me to watch Damon Stoudemire, like, it had to be like a Saturday ABC or ABC game. It wasn't like ACC where I can catch him during the week. You know, I can only see him on Saturday. You know, I could see Travis Best during the week because he was at Georgia Tech when I was in high school. And, no, I used to watch the move that Damon Stoudemire did, and I'd go right in the backyard and just do that move, the same move for like 2 hours straight, the same exact move. So I could perfect it. So them guys are ones I kind of looked at.
Yeah, Travis Best don't get enough love, man. He's skilled at Tech, man. He was – I think he came right after – what's my man named, the lefty?
Kenny Anderson.
Kenny Anderson, yep. He came right after Kenny. Had some big shoes to fill, and they was tough, man. The ACC so tough. But anyway, so you get there in 1995. How was it for you adjusting? I mean, you from Rayford. I mean, small town. You 5'9". How was it for you?
Man, the city itself, it wasn't a hard adjustment for us living because I'm from a small city, so I didn't need much. You know, I hadn't experienced nothing.
Right.
You know, my mom didn't have nothing. You know, we went to Fayetteville, we was right back. You know, we go see our cousins, our aunts and uncles in Fayetteville, and we was right back. Like, we go to the mall and get something every blue moon. Mm-hmm. But like, we didn't do restaurants and all that, so none of that stuff really mattered to me. You know, and when I first got there, Merle Code and Bill Harder was playing one-on-one full court. And I just walked in the gym like, hold up. You know, I wasn't in the best shape then. I never took my body serious till I got to Clemson. You know, in high school, you know, when you're young, well, now it's different because people see it, but you just go play. You go play and hoop and come back and eat whatever mom cook. You ain't even thinking about your body and how you got to take care of your body. So I see them playing full court, and I'm like, man, I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not playing full court, one-on-one, like picking, as soon as the ball goes through the basket, they picking each other up. It's not like running back to half court waiting on the other guy to get there.
Right.
They like picking each other full court playing one-on-one. I'm like, hold up, I can't. I can't do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, this, I don't know. So it was a big adjustment basketball wise for me. Not living, basketball wise was a big adjustment because it was the first time that I really want the man.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, even in high school when I was younger, I played all them boys that was older. Them was like my friends. I grew up with them. So it wasn't no, I always felt I was like a better player than them because I was serious about the sport.
Right.
I was serious. You know, whatever sport it was, I was serious. Like, I ain't never think that they was better, but it was the first time I realized, like, I got to really work to even get on the court. You know, it was a couple of times that I was even contemplating leaving, like, as a freshman. You know what I'm saying? I left a couple of practices like, man, I'm going back to Rafer. I even packed my car up and drove home to Rafer. Like, I'm done. And, you know, this was before cell phones and all that. And they had called, the coaches had called my mom. So, if I'm driving, you know, I'm driving, no cell phone. I'm driving 4.5 hours to the crib. As soon as I get there, my mom waiting on me. She's like, hey, get you a good night's sleep because you back on the road at 7:30 in the morning getting going back. She's like, you ain't there. But you know what? Like, the coach, and Rick Barnes is a real hard-nosed coach. He's an old-school guy, man. Like, but I could handle that because my high school coach was Bobby Knight, was his idol. So he was, like, just like Bobby Knight. So I could handle the tough part of the coaching. That didn't really affect me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hold on 1 second. Let me cut this light on. I know it's getting kind of dark.
Now, you good. Go ahead. Yeah, me and Drew always talk about, like, when we got to college, too, that was the thing. Like, we realized, because, you know, if you get to, especially if you, I mean, really D2, too, but, you know, if you're good enough to play college ball, you pretty much were the man from, like, 10th grade, at least 10th grade to senior.
The 10th grade up.
Yeah, you've been the guy. Mm-hmm. So it's like, all you got to do is show up. And so then you get to college and you realize everybody's been the guy for
everybody.
For where they
everybody's been the guy.
Yeah. And then the upperclassmen are, and because I did the same thing when the freshman, when you're a sophomore, junior, senior, the freshmen come, you can't wait for them to get on campus just to play pickup with them, just so you can show them what time it is because they don't know. You know, you don't know.
They don't know. Yeah, so. I wasn't heavily recruited. So when I got there, we had 7 freshmen come in. So everybody was ranked higher than me coming in. So I was kind of like a throw-in. They weren't really expecting much from me when I came into Clemson.
Wow.
So I always had an underdog mentality, and I'm like, I'm a worker. You know what I'm saying? I'm gonna work hard with whatever I do. So I just kept working, and building and building, and in my freshman year, every time I got on the court, I made things happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I go from playing 8 minutes, and now I'm playing 15 minutes. Now, you know, I'm playing a game where I get 22 minutes. And then our 2 point guards go down my freshman year, Merrill Cole and Bill Harder. Merrill tore his ACL. Mm-hmm. And Bill had some little knee issues where he was getting his knee scoped and all that. So he missed a couple of games. So I was the only PG on the roster. That was healthy.
Wow.
And they started the ACC season, and I played well, and they want no looking back. You know, I wasn't giving that spot up once I got my chance to get on the court. Like, it's done. Like, Murr, I love you. You got to go to the 2, Bill. Like, you know, you my guy, but you got to back me up now. Like,
yeah.
You know, and them guys was guys I really looked up to and helped me a lot to show me what college basketball was all about.
Yeah, that's tough. So,
man, you end up having like a dope career at Clemson, right? Like, on some, we wish we could have that type of career. I just remember seeing some of your games and just, you know, I just always knew who you were. But, you know, how were you able to accomplish, you know, not only just being one of the Clemson greats, but like you're talking about just as far as like classic ACC stories. So, like, how did all that come in? And this is a little throw-in question. Did you know by the end of your senior year, you was like, you know, I'm kind of nice.
I always had like one thing about me, I always had self confidence, and like I always felt like I was the best dude on the court. You know, once I got on the court, you know what I'm saying? Because I was small, but when I was on the court, like guys 6'8" didn't really look 6'8" to me until we was in street clothes. You know what I'm saying? Like on the court, guys 6'8" didn't really look 6'8" to me.
That's dope.
You know, so
yeah,
I wasn't afraid of nothing, and I didn't really know. You know, I might have been naive, but all I cared about was the team's success, and the numbers kept piling up, and the assists kept piling up, the steals kept piling up over the years, and I had no clue, man, to be honest, until my senior year was over. And they was like, they give us our jersey, and they was like, you know, you one of 13 players in ACC history to have 1,800 points and 500 assists in a career. You number two all-time in the school history in scoring. Like, I didn't know that. And I'm only 41 points behind Eldon Kim. I'm like, damn, I'd have knew that. You trying to tell me I couldn't got 41 extra points in 4 years if I'd have knew where I was at. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, I'd have got that for sure if I'd have knew that. But that wasn't nothing I ever even thought about. Like, for all that to happen, you know, I was kind of naive to it while I was playing because that didn't really matter to me.
Yeah, and Eldon Campbell ended up being in the NBA, right? For the Lakers. He played for the Lakers.
Yeah, he was in the Lakers. He got a chip with the Lakers. Detroit, he got a chip with Detroit. He was in the Hornets for a while.
Yeah,
big guy.
Yeah, he I just remember he was on that team with the Lakers, and MJ caught him a couple times where every time they showed the highlights, I'd be like, oh, there you go.
Yeah.
You got booed.
You know, it was funny.
And Clemson was known for, like, big men. You know, Clemson was known for big men. Like, the big men, the ones that shine the most. You know, Chris Whitney and Grayson Marshall, them was the guards that kind of
– Horace Grant.
Before me. Yeah, before me that came. And I don't know, man. I just always felt like I was one of the best. And to be honest, like, going to – I didn't make the team, but going to the USA Olympic trials – after my sophomore year and playing to get, like, Tyronn Lue was my roommate.
Okay.
And he was my roommate, like, playing against all the top guys that was in college, man, from
who else was on
Sham God, Ed Cota, Tyronn Lue, Andre Miller, Paul Pierce, Chauncey Billups. That's when me and Chauncey Billups actually first time we met and got cool out there. Chauncey Billups, man, it was so, like, if you was a top player in college, you play. Obviously, Greg Butler on my team.
Yeah.
You know, Buck was on there. I'm Earl Borkins. He was out there.
You pretty much just said
Mel Thomas, damn, Tyson Whip. Man, it was so many. Like, all the top college players was out there. And that's when my confidence really got high.
Yeah.
My sophomore year, because I was out there, even though I didn't make the team, and these supposed to be the top 30 or 40 players in the country, however many was of us, top 30 or 40 players in the country, and I'm out there holding my own, and them guys, like, know who I am now. That's when my confidence, when I got back to Clemson, you couldn't come to Clemson and think you was better than me, because I done played with the best in the country and held my own, so you came to Clemson, I'm showing you what it is.
Yeah.
You know, Cape, the crazy thing he said was this. Cape and I always talk about this. Like, we'll see guys in street clothes and we'll be like, you don't look 6'7". But when we see them on the court, we'll be like, oh, nah, he's 6'7". But it was funny how that's kind of reversed for you. Like,
yeah, it was reversed for me. Like, guys, when I'd be like, yo, man, I didn't realize how tall you were. But on the court, it's like, you know, Dean Smith had a good quote. So he was the first coach to put Vince Carter on me. Vince 6'6", and he had said in the interview, they asked him why he played Vince on me. You know, this was and he said that Shamar Williams, even though he was 6'3", that he was too small to guard me. because I could get my shot off because I was a lot athletic than my size, you know. So I could get my shot off and I could get to where I want to. And whereas Vince, his length and, you know, he's 6'6", 6'7", you know, he, you know, the first time he did that, you know, I probably had one of my worst games in college until I figured out how to play against guys that size, actually guarding. That was the first time somebody that size with that kind of athleticism was actually guarding me. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So this was kind of before Ed came and kind of did his thing. But yeah, having Vince guard me, then Coach K put Chris Carwell on me and started, you know, everybody want to put a 6'6 wing on me, you know, so.
What'd you figure out, though? What'd you figure out what to do against them big guys?
Man, I just try to play in transition. And I played off the ball too. Like I brought the ball up, but we played a motion offense. So against a smaller guy, I try to get my shot off my dribble because I can get it off. But against them, I use more off the ball screens to get them kind of closing out. If I can get them in a closeout, then I could shoot too well and I was quick. It wasn't really much, you know. That's anybody that's a good player. If you're in a closeout, you can't guard nobody in the closeout. That's why coaches practice team defense so much. If you're a good player and somebody's running at you and you got an option to shoot or drive, how can you stop that?
You can't. Mm-hmm. Hey, dog, I got to tell you, the move I stole from you, I was waiting until we got to this point. Your hezzy pull-up.
Yeah.
Yo, hezzy with the left, though. See, most people hezzy with the...
People do it with the right, but I had the ball in my left hand.
You
like
had the ball with your left hand.
A lot of people, did it with their off hand, and that's easy. It's more natural that way.
Right.
So, I worked on both, and I give credit to really my man, Elgin. He was like, if you do that going right, why don't you do it going left? So I started working on it, and that was kind of really one of my signature moves, man, especially when the shot clock was late. Because if you got on your left hand, they automatically thinking he's driving left or he's going to try to cross me or whatever. So just a little hezzy, little quick in and out with the left and just raise, you know. So,
yeah,
that was it.
I stole it from you, dog. I ain't saying I had it mastered, but I tried.
Hey, that's crazy that you noticed that, because a lot of people won't even notice that, because a lot of people, now you can, because now with all the skill work that people do, everybody mm-hmm. can do it. But back then, you wasn't really hezoing and raising off your strong hand.
Nah, dog. And the reason that this lets you know, like I told you, VHS, man, I'm going to tell you, my dad would get me for Christmas and my birthday them 6-hour long VHS blank tape so I could record the games. And that rewind button, when y'all played Duke in the ACC tournament, when they had Shane
at and Chris, ACC
and you were, I was like, yo, So look, you had a crazy career at Clemson, and we know now, like, you know, you didn't get drafted. You didn't go to the league or whatever. But was it your expectation that you was going to get drafted? Or did you go to the draft? Or what was that night like?
100%. I didn't go to the draft. But really, hindsight, I know I wouldn't get drafted because how everything went down. Because, you know, my college coach, Rick Barnes, he left and went to Texas, you know, and we had Larry Schott who recruited me. You know, he like a father figure to me. You know, we still real close to this day. And he was kind of new at the having players, getting agents and all that. So when agents was trying to contact me, you know, I was one that was always a respectable guy. He was like, hey, just wait, I'm gonna help you with the process, you know, and I trusted that, you know, not knowing he didn't have experience in it, you know, not knocking him, he didn't have experience in it. So the agent that I picked was more catered for Europe. And he was like, I only had like 2 workouts. And I led the AC in scoring my senior year. And I thought that was strange, you know. And I was like, you know, he was like, well, Philly really liked you. Larry Brown, he came to the game. Because that was during – my senior year was during the NBA lockout where they didn't start playing until, like, January or February. I can't remember. So we had a lot of head coaches at our game. So a lot of the head coaches saw us and not the scout. Normally the scouts come scout you, and unless you like lottery, then the head coach might come back then. But now, but I'm thinking the whole time I'm getting drafted. Like, so I signed a contract to go to France with an NBA clause in it saying if you get drafted, if you get drafted, then you good. Like, I'm not thinking about CBA or nothing like that. Like, that's not even a thought. So I'm thinking like, okay, you know, my agent telling me what this, what I should do. I didn't have no experience in it. You know what I'm saying? We didn't have players at Clemson just going to the league every year where we knew agents was all around and that, you know, it wasn't the case. Buck got drafted a year before and I talked to his agent. But me being so naive and not understanding how stuff work, I'm like, man, Buck got drafted like 50-something. Like, no, I'm not getting his agent.
But he got drafted.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's right. Just being like what it was. Like, that's what I was thinking. And, you know, it hurt me in the long run because I didn't understand the process. I didn't understand how hard it was to get drafted. I just figured if I lead the SC in scoring, it's only two people, one person other than – at the time, only one person in the history of the league that led the ACS scoring that didn't get drafted. So I'm like, not thinking, not getting drafted, not even an option, right. You know? And then when it didn't happen, and I was kind of stuck in that contract, man, I had a draft party at my mom's house, everything, dog. And it got to like, when it got to pick 50, and I didn't get drafted, man. I just went upstairs and I cried for like 2 hours, dog. Like, I was so hurt.
Yeah.
I didn't even watch the end of the last 10 picks. I didn't watch because I'm like, if I ain't going by now, I ain't going.
Yeah.
You know, it don't even matter. And then I was crying if I ain't get drafted, but I was mostly crying because I had to go to France. I was locked into that contract. I'm over here sick. Like, oh no, what have I done? Like, what have I done? Like, I just blew it. Like, yeah. And then it's crazy. I get a call. My agent called me that night. I didn't even take his call. And I end up calling him the next day. And he was like, hey, Philly wanna fly you out, you know. It's better in second round. You didn't get drafted. So I talked to Philly. You know, really, he just feeding me a bunch of BS. You know what I'm saying? Because I already got the signed contract to go to go to France. So he was like, yeah. So when I get to Philly and play summer league with Philly, play well, man. Larry Brown, Larry Hughes was a two guard. Kewan Garrett started at the point. And I end up playing okay, man, playing well. And Larry Brown was like, man, I've been watching you. I tell everybody, you like Damon Stoudemire. Him not knowing that that's who I patterned my game after, really, you know. And what's crazy is playing well in the middle of summer league. And my agent was like, hey, you got to go get a visa. You got to go get a visa. For France, they want you to leave in like 2 days and be there. I'm like, what? I'm in the middle of summer league. What you leave? I'm like, nah, I gotta go home. Like, they wanted me to leave from Philadelphia and fly straight to Europe.
Wow.
And leave the summer league. I'm like, oh, nah, I can't do that. I ain't seen my mom. I ain't seen my brother, my little sister. Like, hold up. I can't leave. So my first year out, man, that was the most depressed I ever been playing sports.
Wow.
Because I was over in France stuck, you know. That was the first time I played a whole season and didn't work on my game at all.
How did you play, though? How did you?
I averaged like 19. I averaged like 19, but I was hurt. I was hurt because I didn't take care of my body, man. I was out partying. I was just over there in France. And, you know, I was trying to find ways to see if how I can get home. You know, I left like twice throughout the season and came home for like 2 weeks. When I hurt my foot, I told them like, hey, I'm going to go back to Clemson and work with the trainers there and get my foot right. And, you know, I left, you know, and and then go came to Clemson for like a day. Then I went back home to Rayford and just chilled till my 2 weeks was up. You know, I was just depressed, dog. And it won't tell. Really, the next year I went to Germany, and then the D-League started.
I was about to ask you about the D-League. That's what my follow-up was going to be. Okay.
The D-League started after my second year. So my team actually went bankrupt, and that was the happiest moment. My team went bankrupt, and I was so happy not to get paid, dog. It was crazy because I was in Germany. The team went bankrupt. My agent called me like, hey, I got this team in France, this team and this team, because I was playing well. Now I'm getting, when I was in Germany, I started getting the love back. You know what I'm saying? Because Germany is actually a cool country to live in. It's more Americanized. You know, it had military bases. So I was seeing some more Americans. I was like, okay, let me knock this year out. And I'm going to go at it, try to get to the league, whatever. Don't want to do summer league and do my thing. Mm-hmm. So the team folded. So my brother, I came home for Christmas. They called me over the Christmas break. Like, yo, the team folded. Went bankrupt, so we ain't gonna be able to pay you. So I had a return ticket. I was like, you need to get my brother a ticket. So my brother flew back over there with me. I stayed for probably 2 weeks with no team, just so my brother can experience Germany a little bit, and pack my stuff up. And I came home, man. So I was home in probably like January or February. Mm-hmm. And I just worked out, man. Just worked on my game, and then got ready for the D-League.
You ended up playing in the D-League, right? Did you play for the Fayetteville team, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah. The D-League, man, the D-League was – first it was Tony Archibald was the coach.
Yeah.
Man, the D-League was – it was rough for us to travel. You know, back then it was only 8 teams. Mm-hmm. And we played 50 games, and it was 8 teams, dog. I know Corey Alexander game better than he know his own game. I tell him that, too. You know he do TV. I be telling him that. I told him that when I first got to Clemson. Like, man, I knew your game. He said the same thing to me. Like, man, I knew everything you could do on the court. And we played him like 10 times.
Wait a minute, like, Y'all played 50 games with 8 teams, dog.
8 teams, and we played 50 games. No, we played 8. It was crazy, but man, it was fun. That was when I got the love back, man. The competitive nature came back when Omar Cook came to the team. He had got drafted, then he got released, and he came down to the D League, and he was with us in Fayetteville. And then around this time, Coach Capel took over. Mm-hmm. Coach Capel took over. Obviously, I've been having ties to your family, you know, ever since I was young, going to the family in Aberdeen, going to have our family reunion there at the spot. So I always had ties. So it kind of brought that – he kind of brought that love back, that competitive, because I'm a competitive dude. So having him brought that competitive out. And I ended up playing well, man. In the second year in the D-League, well, let me go back. So went back summer. I went to summer league, played with the Milwaukee Bucks. Played well. Ended up getting a training camp invite to the New Orleans Hornets. They first year in New Orleans.
Okay.
Did that. Did my thing there. Did okay, man. I was the last cut, and you know George Lynch and Elden Campbell was on the team. Last cut because Lee Nalen, he had gotten into it with Paul Silas or something during the game, and they released him. So now it's 14. You know, you can have 15 on the roster. So now it's 14, and it's me. So I'm like, oh, man, I done made my way to the league. You know what I'm saying? So I'm hyped. You know, I'm thinking, they telling me to go start looking for plays like the players. Like, because BD was on the team, but George Lynch was like, because George Lynch really was the one, like, taking me to dinner after games, you know. But I was kicking with, like, Lee Nalen and Track the Trailer, like, after practice, but after games, I would go with the vet. Mm. And he was like, man, you probably need to think about getting your car shipped here and start looking for somewhere to stay, you know, because you know, everybody's talking about how well you're doing, you're going to be on the team or whatever. No, 2 days later, you know, the day before the rosters have to be finalized, I'm thinking like, I should have known now. when you're older and now you know how the business work, I should have knew because I played in every preseason game except the one the day before they cut me.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, and I didn't play, and I'm like, hold up, BD out. Before BD was hurt, you know, he was hurt, so he didn't play much in the preseason. So it's Bryce Drew. Like, I love Bryce Drew, but I was working Bryce Drew in practice, so I'm like, this guy just signed a big contract, but everybody in this room, in here know I'm better than Bryce Drew as a player.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, no disrespect to him.
Right.
You know, he's a good dude.
Right.
But I know and felt like I was a better basketball player. You know what I'm saying? And it's just the way the business go. He was under contract, and they didn't play me at all. And I should have knew then what it was. And the next day, they released me, and they called me in the office. And that's the reason I went back to Fayetteville to the D-League. It was because they told me, like, hey, if anything happened, you know, BD's been hurt. You know our system. You know, this Paul Silas and Jeff Bauer, the GM, telling me, like, hey, you know our system. Everybody here, you good. You show great professionalism. We ain't got to worry about you off the court. You're not going to get in any trouble. You know, you're going to come work hard. You're going to do everything we ask. You know, we're going to bring you back. So he asked me what my plans. I was like, well, you know, at this time, you know, them year, my team went bankrupt my second year. My first year, you know, I ain't never had made money. You know what I'm saying? So by the time I got to that second year, that money was gone. You know what I'm saying? I was 21 with that with money now. So, you know, me and my brothers and my cousin in Greensboro, we out every day. We going to the mall. Like, everybody getting new shirts every day. You know what I'm saying? You know, so I done blew through everything young. So I ain't really have no money. So I'm like, hey, man, I'm probably going to go back overseas. And they talked me into going to the D-League again, which probably, to be honest, was one of the best teams that I played on, man. Going back, that was probably one of the funnest years. Man, we had 10 legit good players, man. Jason was on the team, Kate, Omar Cook, Matt Barnes. We had Devin Brown. Like, we had Jeff Aubrey, Jameer Walker. Like, we had, like, a legit good team, dog. And we didn't win the championship, but we dominated the D-League that year.
Yeah, I used to hear stories. Wasn't the Birdman on one of them teams?
Yeah, he was on the team my first year when it first happened.
Yeah,
and what's crazy? He was my roommate, and he, man, dog, he was only there for like 2 weeks.
And he got called up, right?
Called up, and it's funny now because Tiny Archibald was like, "Hey, Y'all just stay working on your game, because if he can get called up, everybody in here got a chance." You know, because he was a role player. He wasn't, if you look at just skill wise, he wasn't a skilled player, but he was athletic.
And he was 6'11".
You know,
And he was 6'11", right?
He was 6'11". But if you see him in practice, he wasn't Birdman then, you know what I'm saying? He wasn't.
Chris.
He wasn't that kind of player, but he ended up being a good player in the league and finding his niche and his role and what he do well and did what he did well and had a good career. But at that time, it was like, I remember he was like, he got up at like 3 a.m. and was like, man, I'm about to go get on the treadmill. I'm like, what? He's like, I think I'm about to get called up. And so he go down the treadmill. I'm in the room. It's like 3 a.m. And I couldn't go back to sleep because I'm like, he about to get called up. Hold up. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he about to get called up. Like, he ended up doing well. He got called up to Denver. You know what I'm saying? He played well. You know, he played well and had a really good career. But he was on the team for like 2 weeks in Fayetteville my first year.
I heard stories about that team with Matt Barnes and Chris Anderson. And how y'all used to, I don't know if you was, y'all used to go up to Fayetteville State and go fishing, so to speak. Go up camping.
Hey, I didn't mess with them boys a lot. Like, I mean, we did, not saying that, but I was home. So,
right.
So I had like my boy from Rafe come to the crib. So a lot of times when Matt and them went out, I hung with, Omar was kind of hung with me.
Okay.
And them boys kind of did their own thing, you know what I'm saying? But, yeah, it was a lot of Felver State and a lot of other stuff that we can't talk about over here. But.
Yeah, so we gotta talk more about your overseas career, man, because you went on to have a phenomenal career. I saw a video recently or read up recently that the Clemson, y'all went over there, what, last year, 2 years ago to Italy?
And, yeah, went to Italy 2 years ago, some years ago.
And I read that, you know, people were running up to you and trying to take pictures and autographs and get autographs from you. And so I was like, damn, boy. And so I went and did some research. I went and YouTubed you because I ain't YouTubed you since VHS. You know, back then I ain't looking.
You was
killing over there. And they ended up retiring your jersey over there, right?
Yeah, my team retired my jersey. So after I left the D-League my second year, and I was done with the league. I told my agent, like, yo, find me something in Europe. And it was Italy. And I went first, it was second division, Italy. And so I'm over there, second division, playing well. You know, now I'm back to my normal self as far as how I prepare, how I think about the game, how I feel about the game, didn't matter where I was at. And what really changed for me, Kate and Drew, what really changed for me, I started watching players in the EuroLeague, like Tyus Edney and Trajan Langdon. And I started talking to my agent about the guys that was in EuroLeague. I stopped really even watching the NBA, to be honest. And I was focused on Europe. And I was, you know, and it's a big deal. The EuroLeague is a big deal. So I started putting all my focus in getting to the EuroLeague because, for one, it was high level, but I started finding out what them boys was making. You know what I'm saying? What the EuroLeague boys was making over there. It's like being in the league. So I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I got to get to that. And then the way they publicize everything over there, if you're in EuroLeague, you kind of like a big deal over there. So it took me like 3 years, 2 years that year, and then two more years after that before I got on a team that went well. And really what got me to on the map in Italy, I went 10 for 10 in a game from three. Mm-hmm. And it was made a big deal because it was the record. Nobody ever, you know, hit that many threes without missing. And after that game, to be honest, everything kind of took off for me. I got to the team in Siena. We played well, had Joe Forte on the team, Lonnie Baxter, Romaine Sato went to Xavier, Sean Stoner went to Ohio State, Remus Calcanus went to Seton Hall. So we had a mob, like we had a legit mob, and we won the championship. And what's crazy is, unexpectedly, I got MVP of the Italian League that year.
Wow.
That's when everything changed, like how everybody looked at me in Italy, and then I started getting some attention. The next year, we went to EuroLeague and played well, and I started getting that European attention and started killing EuroLeague and got first team all EuroLeague and all that, and it took off, man. To be honest, it took off, something I didn't really expect, but it took off, and a lot of people don't know I turned down minimum NBA contract in the end, guaranteed minimum NBA contracts to stay in Italy because I was in EuroLeague and what they was, the minimum wasn't really close to what I was making at the time.
Wow. Hey, before we move on, I gotta, because you said a name, because a lot of our listeners are like younger. I don't think they understand some of the names you're talking about, like Tyus Edney, yeah. UCLA legend. Joe Forte is like, yo, that's why me and Drew are like, yo, because Joe Forte freshman year, it was the blue and white game. So Jason was a sophomore.
Yeah.
Me and my dad, we go to the game. Joe Forte had 40 in the blue and white game as a freshman.
Yeah, man. That dude can score that rock, man. I saw him because he was a year or two younger.
Yeah.
And I, we was catching game. By then, I'm back. By the time he was finishing up, I'm back, like, in Europe. I'm in Italy now, so I'm knowing what's going on. I'm following and seeing how he killing in Carolina and all that, you know. But I didn't realize how prolific of a scorer he is. Like he could score. He can do a lot of other things too, but he can really score that basketball.
Yeah, and crazy enough, like I think him and Keith Bogans were backcourt and at DeMatha in high school. Weren't him and Keith Bogans like the backcourt?
Yeah, they played together. Yeah.
Jesus Christ, yo. That's crazy. Did you play against
Keith Langford? That's a crazy squad he just named.
Did you play against Keith?
That's just a crazy squad he just named.
Yeah, I know. All the legends. Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, I feel like I have moments of like every one of those guys he named, just the Eddie layup, right? The NCAA tournament.
Yeah, you remember something about him, right? Yeah. That's what made me, like, I played against Trajan in college, so I started watching, and Trajan was over there making, like, he had just left the league, so he was over there. My agent was like, yeah, this is, like, we're gonna set you up. This is what it is. So he kind of mapped out a blueprint for me to get to that level, and I stuck to the strip, and it got me where I was at.
Yeah, because Trajan went to Cleveland. He was with Cleveland, and I think he had
was in Cleveland like a couple games. Years, and then he got out of there and went to Europe. He only played in the league. I'm not sure how many years, but it wasn't long. But he really killed them overseas. Mm-hmm. People don't realize that he did his thing over there. And I thought I heard you say Keith Langford. I played against him a lot of years in Italy, man. He was in Bologna. I was in Siena. But we had some good battles over there. Keith Langford, another lefty scorer. You know, I think I don't know when he stopped playing, but he played for a long time. He may still be playing. I'm not sure. But he did his thing over there for a long time, man. A lot of people that people forget is really over in Europe, really killing it. You know, before you know, like playing against Dragic and Ricky Rubio and Marc Gasol and all these pros now that our guys here know that's European, like, you know, these guys I played against EuroLeague like every other day.
Oh, Keith Langford was so incredible, man. I used to rock the white socks with the black shoes just like him. this is when I was at VCU, so I'm still like he was so smooth. Like these left.
Yeah, he's smooth. He real smooth. Smooth game, man. And one thing about him, when you can score that rock at all three levels,
right?
It's tough. You're tough to stop, man. When you can score that ball at all three levels, it's tough to stop.
Yeah. I know it's off the script, man, but I just had to ask, man, when you're at that level, right, and then you think about the league, is the league that real, or is it one of those you got to have the perfect situation?
Great question.
The league is that real from probably 1 through 7.
What you mean?
One through seven, 1 through 8 on the roster. Like the top seven, probably the top seven guys are – they where they belong. Right. But when you get to like 9, 10, 11, and 12, they can handpick, you know, they can go to Europe and handpick anybody and say that's in EuroLeague or wherever and say, okay, I can put you here, just the opportunity. Mm-hmm. You know, then it's about the opportunity. It's not a difference and when it comes to that. And the guys that's been in the league, guy that's in the league, guy that's been to Europe, they can attest and validate that, you know, it's not the drop off is not major when you get to the end of the roster in the league. I mean they NBA players, they still top players in the world, but when you're in EuroLeague, you're one of the top players in the world as well.
And just for the listeners to understand, because we know some people, Drew, we know some local people they don't understand that EuroLeague is like the top league in like it's basically like the NBA over there. So we're not talking Scotland or Sweden or something like that.
When people say they play in Europe, and if they say they played in EuroLeague and they got a lot of credentials in EuroLeague, then you gotta respect that.
Right.
You know, it's some people that go overseas and do what they love, making money doing what they love, and that's great. But it's different.
Yes.
You know, it's like being in the G League. And playing in the league is two different. You a pro, but it's two different pros. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, it's a big difference between the G League and LeBron. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're not even in the same category. It's the same in Europe. Like, guys can be in Europe playing in these places, which is great for them.
Right.
But the EuroLeague is a different level. They're not even in the same comparison to the guys that playing in the EuroLeague.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, I'm glad you clarified that, man, because you definitely answered a lot of questions out here, man, because you hear guys all the time about to go back across that water, and it's like, I just don't see it, but okay.
Yeah, it's great. It's great because they, you know, you get to play basketball and get paid for it. Like, no matter if you got to go across the world to do it, you know, it's still a great thing, right. But it's not the same when you're talking about the level of it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, it's levels to it, like, in anywhere. You know what I'm saying? It's like playing, you know, I played college basketball. You could be playing D3 or NAIA. You're playing college basketball, but it's not ACC. It's not high major. It's not Big Ten. It's not.
No.
It's a big difference.
Yes.
It's a big, big, big difference. And it's the same in Europe.
And we're going to move on because I know we want to respect your time. But I have to say this too, speaking of this big difference, is that I hate when guys say they'll be watching an NBA game and they'll say, man, he's sorry. He sucked. And I tell people all the time, and this might go against what you're saying, but I'm like, dude, the dude is in street clothes on the NBA bench can come to your town right now. And as soon as he lands, as soon as he touched down, he's, if not the best player in your town, he's one.
No, let's not get what I said. I don't want people to get confused on what I said now. When I'm talking, I'm comparing.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
8 through 12 in comparison to EuroLeague players.
Right.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
If I go home to Rayford and they look and my boys, we out there chilling and they say, man, this dude's sorry. Like, no, he's not sorry. Like, this dude will be the best player in the state.
Yeah.
Not in the state. You know what I'm saying? He can go to the gym, any gym in North Carolina, if it's not guys that's in the NBA or in high level Europe, and he's gonna make you look like you're in middle school.
That's right.
Like, let's not get it twisted. The guys in the NBA are really, really good players.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Well, like, they're not, like, it's no sorry players in the NBA.
No.
If you're just an average dude talking about the NBA, like, players are sorry, it's no sorry dude. If you a guy that's in EuroLeague or a guy on the verge of making the league, then you probably could say that about a couple players because you know that you're better than them.
Yeah.
But if you don't got no credentials and you saying that this dude is terrible and you only played high school and played 1 year of junior college, come on, man.
I've never watched an NBA game and be like, yo, I can do what he does.
Yeah, I can do what he did. Man, you get on that court, man, you couldn't even make it through it. You probably couldn't even score in practice.
No, man.
Man, hey, Cape and I can really attest to this. We'll look at NBA games, and we might see a guy who he didn't play that game, right? But Cape and I will be like, yo, I bet he worked out 3 or 4 times a day. Like, NBA workouts, getting shots up. He said,
no, ask E. I know y'all talked to E already. My cousin E, he did his thing in the league, man. And
yeah. And
what's crazy, so unfortunate for him because before he tore his ACL, dog, he was the best backup in the league. And he was on the verge of getting that big contract when he messed his knee up. You know what I'm saying? It's crazy how things work. You know, the man upstairs don't make no mistakes. And he got a plan for everybody, you know. But E knows, if you're not playing – You doing that extra work. You know, you got to get your – because if somebody go down, you got to be in the same kind of shape that he in. So if you're not playing in games, how else you going to get in shape?
Yeah, yeah.
You got to work out. You already know going into the game that you're not playing.
Yeah.
So you're doing a full-blown practice before the game, and you got to get your conditioning in right after the game is over.
Yeah, it's almost like they telling you, don't get hurt then. Like, because rehabbing and the conditioning is worse than practice.
And I know because I had to do it in New Orleans when I didn't play, and I was in training camp.
God.
You know what I'm saying? So you have to be at that level. And if you're a professional, you're going to make sure you get your work in. You don't want to be make sure you're not ready. And the ones that's not ready, they don't last.
Yeah.
They don't last. Yeah. Your talent gets you there, but your work ethic keep you there.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. I feel like we could go on hours just on, like, just little stories we heard. Like, we hear about, like, Dennis Rodman running 30 miles on the treadmill after a game or something. We'd be like, what in the world? But
yeah, man. Like, guys, like, serious about, like, guys get, like, they go in and get like a full lift, like they had 2 days off and on the treadmill right after game. You see, sometimes every blue moon they might show somebody after a game in the gym getting shots up.
Yeah.
But dog, that happens on a regular basis, man. These guys take their craft serious, and if you do, that's why they where they at.
I seen LeBron and D Wade lifting together after a game, like.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm saying.
Game, they just won a game, and they in there doing the bands. You know, LeBron is, like, just – I mean, he getting a four. I'm like, yo, you just had 38. Like, go to the crib.
But you just had a game because you never know what their schedule is like the next day. When you them guys, they might have – you know, them type of guys might have some TV stuff to do or something that on their off day, they might have an off day the next day. They got to go ahead and get their work in because they got other stuff in their personal, like other business ventures and stuff that they try to do on their off day to get done that they can't.
Yeah.
So they get their work in right after the game. Like,
that makes sense.
I mean, it's a game, but I mean, it's not that taxing where you be.
Yeah.
Practice is really harder than games if you practice the way you're supposed to.
Right.
Yeah. Man, so you officially, you know, you retire in 2011.
Now,
There were some injuries. Now, would you think it was more so injury-related, or was it kind of one of those things where you were kind of looking like, okay, it's time for me to start my next, you know, venture in life?
Nah, it was 100% injury. I had messed my hip up, and not knowing that I was bone on bone until I got back to Italy. I went to Spain, and I had probably the worst playing year of my life in Spain. Like, that was the worst year I ever had. You know, I was, you know, early 30s. And that was the worst season of my, and I couldn't figure out because the people was telling me it was my groin, the team I was previously, that my groin was hurt. But it won't, my groin ended up being my hip. So I was bone on bone with my hip. And specialist in Italy in 2011, I'm in training camp, and I was like, man, my hip, I couldn't really practice. Uh-huh. So I went through a lot of tests, going to see spline all over Italy, seeing different specialists and everything. So come to find out, my bone was degenerating in my hip, and had no cartilage. So he was like, man, you're not going to have a good quality of life if you continue to play. So I ended up retiring. Like, I ended up playing – when he told me that, because I was, you know, I was stubborn and like, man, I'm still playing. And my team told me, like, man, you ain't got to practice. Because I'm a vet now. He was like, you ain't got to practice. I was done with my European competition, so I only played one game a week. I was at the back end of my career. So I knew that anyway, my own personal goal was only like, I only had like 2 or 3 years that I wanted to play anyway. Mm. You know, but at the time, you know, I was still like in mode, and I couldn't do it. And they was like, you could practice, but I didn't want to be that. And then, you know, I ended up having to get a hip replacement. I had a hip replacement, you know what I'm saying? So got my hip replaced at a young age. And that's really why how my career ended over my hip, because I needed a hip replacement. I ended up getting that done.
Wow.
Now, can you still like kind of, I know you're probably not full throttle now, but if you wanted to like get out there and like play a pickup game, you think you could do that if you wanted to?
Nah, we still play pickup here. You know, it ain't the same. I can't move. I play every once in a while here because I'm too competitive. Like, I don't like losing, so I can't play if it's a score involved because right. I don't want these guys really looking at how I am, because I don't talk the same when I'm in competitive mode as I do when I'm just regular in street clothes. Like, I'm a different animal when I'm competing. But you know what's crazy? They changed the rule in college, so I've been able to, you know, just be on the floor with the guys in my role here at Clemson. So just being out there, like, if I could play, I could play pickup. We played pickup probably a few weeks ago. I can't play every day. My hip just won't let me do it. Yeah. But but I can play pickup, and you know, I play in the manager games, and we go to these teams. Ask Kate. We went to Pitts. So I played in the, so the night before the game, we play in like manager games where the staff or managers play against the other team's staff.
Okay.
Oh yeah, I'm still averaging 20. You know, that ain't gonna change. Like that ain't gonna change. Like the shot, cause the shot don't go nowhere. If you can shoot, you're gonna always be effective. You know what I'm saying? Like that ain't never going nowhere. So I can't move. I ain't beat nobody off the dribble. It's more like using my brain more than my ability. So, but nah, to answer your question, yeah, I get out there from time to time just to, you know, the love is never go away from me. You know, I always love the game because even though I'm in a coach's role, I'm a player at heart.
That's right. And hey, I gotta ask, was when y'all went to Pitt, did Jeff get out there?
Nah, Jeff, the head coach don't get out there. Jason said he warned him before that if I play, like, he might not look like, because this is before, like, I was, you know, in game weight, and I ain't looking like I could play ball, you know what I'm saying? So they was, like, not taking me serious, but then about four threes in the first 10 minutes, they was like, okay, hold on now. What's going on? Who is this guy? You know, and, you know, so they quickly realized. But it's fun, man. It's always fun to get out there on the court, man, you know, to play.
I know the guys because, you know, the older we get, the younger these – because, you know, me and Drew both work on college campuses, and so we not coaching, but we know the kids are getting younger and we getting older. And that's just how it goes. It's a blessing, though. But do you sometimes show the players? Do you have to like remind them, like, yo, go Google me real quick, yo. Go type me in on YouTube.
Nah, you know what's crazy here? You know they know. It's players that come to me like, man, I watched your clip last night. You know, and clips of you on YouTube. You know that's been good. You know YouTube because they can go and see. You know. Instead of seeing my picture on the wall, they can actually see me in action. Now they coming out with all these old college footages on YouTube, old games. Now they can see like how I played in college compared to how I played as a pro. So it's, you know, they see it and, you know, it's cool. It's cool for them to know that in my day now, I remind them every once in a while, like, in my day, you couldn't do nothing with me, but you know, now you can. But back then, you weren't stopping me, and I'm going to let you know you can't stop me.
Yeah. We always ask this question because me and Drew, we know our truths and how we were and how it was for us when basketball stopped bouncing. But I can only assume, and that's why we want to ask this question, but you playing at such a high level, having such success, and being in love with the game for such a young age, did you struggle to like transition to life after sports, or was it easy for you?
I struggled a lot, man, to be honest. I struggled a lot, man. It took me about four years before I even started trying to get back in mode or trying to find what I'm gonna do. You know what I'm saying? For one, I didn't have to work at the time. You know what I'm saying? Cause I was straight financially. You know, I was straight financial. I had a really good financial advisor who kind of helped me, you know, shout out to him. But he, you know, so I was in a situation where I didn't have to. You know, I was going to the Y every day in Charlotte. You know, the Dow Y every day. You know, hooping. Yeah. hooping every day on a bad hill. You know, like the love was still there because I struggled, Kate, because like I was forced to quit. You know what I'm saying? Like I didn't go out on my terms, so what's next wasn't really on my radar because I thought I had time for that. So getting in this role here, when I decided, you know, actually Brownell called me and said he had an opportunity and wanted to talk to me about it. And it was something I jumped at because it was something that I wanted to kind of pass along to the guys or kind of, you know, get rid of that gray area because, you know, not just me, but it's 80% of the guys when they done hooping, probably more than that, to be honest, when they done, they really not ready for it. you know, they really not ready for it. Because a lot of players, man, if you're fortunate enough to go out when you want to go out, a lot of players don't get that opportunity to say they done when they exactly want to be done. A lot of people, they get cut early, get an injury. Teams just not calling them, picking, getting them a job. They're not mentally there to start their new life, because all they knew their whole life is that ball, mm-hmm. you know. So you know, now being in this mentorship role, that's one of the biggest things, and one of my biggest messages to our players is, you know, like, go ahead and start getting interest. Get your interest now, you know, something else beside. Like, what's the plan? You know, what if you get hurt tomorrow? What's the plan? Like, know that now. Don't wait till you're 10 years in playing professional, because you don't know if you're going to make it 10 years. You know, be ready now on what you can do, and find other interests now while you're young. And it's the best time to do it while the guys in college and they still learning different things, so they can go ahead and start, you know, they see now Drew and Kate, they can see now a lot of people, the people that they look up to are not just basketball players already. You know, they're mm-hmm. rappers, they're entrepreneurs, they own businesses. They, you know, they already got other avenues of income that's coming in that's not just from relying on basketball. And that's what I want them to be able to do. Like, when you're done, the transition is going to be smooth, and it's not going to be a 4-year transition like it is for me, like it was for me and a lot of players.
Yeah,
we definitely. That's dope, man. That you had that perspective, because I mean, Cape and I, we talk about all the time, man. When we didn't know what was going on after we were done, like you said, we was hooping all the time, but
that's not, all you know.
We didn't know what
you
we
didn't
wanted.
Think of nothing else. You got one track. When you're an athlete, most of the time, you got one track mind, man. I'm going to the NBA. That's it.
Absolutely.
I'm going to major leagues, man. What you talking about, man? Yeah. Not realizing it's only 450 spots.
For the world.
For the world. Not for the states. Not for North Carolina. Not for South Carolina. It's 450 for the world. And when the Europeans started getting their games together, it's 100 of them spots. 50 of those spots going to European, so it's 400 spots for Americans.
Damn, Dream Team woke the whole world up, dog. Dream Team.
I mean, it's a beautiful thing, but it puts things in perspective. Like, it's not that many spots. Like, you got to be one of the chosen few to make it to that NBA, man.
Yes.
Like, you gotta have Plan B. Like, you gotta have a Plan B. Like, Plan A. Plan B could be great. And my Plan B in Europe, man, probably my daughter was born there. Like, dog, my Plan B, dog, I wouldn't trade that in for nothing, being in the league. My career, I wouldn't trade that in for being in the league a year or two for nothing. Because I had the opportunity to leave while I'm at the height of my European career, to leave that and to go be just another guy in the NBA. I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Man, it took us a while just to adjust. Like, we get a job, but we be like, man, yo, we gotta get off work soon, man. I gotta go hoop at 5.
you know, like, it is, man. It's tough, man. It's tough. Like, it's tough when it's in you and when you love it. Like, that's one of the biggest things, too. If you love it, you're gonna want to do it all the time, no matter how old you are,
yeah,
or whatever the situation may be. You're gonna want to at least do it.
Yeah.
So, man, it's been good, man. I'm real blessed, man, to be in this situation now, to be able to help these guys, these young guys, with just my story and understanding what it takes. You know, what it takes to play at the ACC level, college level, what it takes to be a pro, and the hardship it is to find something after. This guys I play with still struggling to find something to do now. You know, it's like I've been blessed to experience a lot in my life, and now I can share it with these guys so their path will be a lot smoother than mine.
Yeah.
We kind of touched on the next question, so I kind of jump into the import. Now, your role now, as far as, you know, director of player development, do you see yourself in the long term wanting to pursue coaching, or is this kind of more your avenue, like, as far as, like, you feel like this is kind of your niche?
Yeah, this my lane. Player development in itself is my lane. I'm more of a life coach here, which I love. You know, I love it. I'm not an X and O guy. Like, I'm not gonna be coaching this guy. But if you want your left hand to be better, if you want your passing to be better, if you want to, you know, if you want to make sure your life is gonna be better, then I'm your guy. You know what I'm saying? Because I love the development side of the game. Development side of coaching. I don't really get much opportunity to do that with all the college rules, but that's the part I love. So to answer your question, staying in basketball, absolutely, in the development side. Do I want to be assistant coach and go coach and be a head coach one day? No, I don't.
we don't want no parts of coaching, man. We like,
you know what I'm saying? Like,
I like working with athletes. Oh, just, no, I ain't trying to do that.
I just don't see myself as that. I see myself like I always did. Like, even when I was done playing, right when I was done, like, I didn't have a job per se working at Clemson or in the business world in Charlotte. But I was training people. Like, I was still training, like, cats that came overseas because they know the work ethic that I have. And that's I love doing that. Like, if you want to get to the gym and work on your game, then that's the part I love. So, you know, never know what can happen. As of right now, I'm happy where it's at. But if an opportunity do come up in a player development, whether it's in the league or whatever, and the situation is right for me and my family, then it's definitely an opportunity that I look at.
Well, dog, look, this ain't on the script. We're going to wrap up, but I got to know, just sitting here talking to you, because, again, we both grew up watching you, man. Because I have my assumptions. Who was the toughest player you played against in college?
It's two. It's two. I ain't even got to think about it.
Who you got?
Stephon Marbury and Harold Dean. And I'm going to go Harold Dean first because he was the first player to, like, give me 30. Not have 30. He gave
you 30.
it's a difference than having 30 in the game and giving somebody 30.
Hold on, Terrell. So for everybody out there that don't know, Harold Dean played at University of Virginia. He looked like Tony Terry, who was also my cousin, but we won't get into that. But he was what? Harold Dean was like, because he lived in Richmond for a while.
Harold Dean was maybe 6'1", but he looked like he could play free safety.
Yes, exactly. And so they had Curtis Staples,
Courtney Alexander, Norman Nolan. They had Jamal Robinson too, athlete.
Oh, yeah.
they had a good team.
So, quick story about Jamal Robinson. So Jamal and Jeff were cool, and so Jamal ended up coming to Rayford one time with Jeff when we used to live out there in Tunbridge. I got pictures.
Oh, really?
I'm gonna send you some pictures, but you know, Jamal had, like, the ball head. Him and Courtney had ball head. They were, like, 18. I was like, what y'all doing? Yeah. Man? I forgot about Jamal, Harold. No, I saw Nolan in Northern Virginia last summer. Remember I told you, Drew, I saw Nolan up there. But he lived in Cali. But they had a squad. But, okay, so Harold Dean and Stephon Marbury, those were the toughest ones.
Toughest players I played in college.
Okay. And Stephon.
Stephon Marbury, like, Harold Dean just flat out, like, gave me 30. Like, he was just – he just kind of bullied me a little bit. You know what I'm saying? I was a freshman, and he did what he wanted. But Steph was athletic, skilled, could shoot. Like, he could do everything, could defend.
Yeah.
Like, he was tough. He was tough.
Yeah. Well, look, man, we appreciate it, man. Like Drew said, man, we probably could talk all night. I know it's family time. I'm glad I ate my dinner before I locked in on y'all. But Yeah. Man, we appreciate it though. We gotta stay in touch, man. And you know, you right up the road from me. So once COVID over, man, I'm always willing to get some tickets from you, you know, once the season is
popular. Yeah, man. Once we get this going, man, you know, we can get it going. You know, I still got my place in Charlotte. So in all season I've been in Charlotte a lot. So that's even closer. So we'll definitely link up sometime soon, man.
Absolutely, man. We appreciate it.
Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, best of luck. I know y'all grinding it out, just kind of waiting to see what's going to happen with everything. But best of luck.
Yeah, man, getting ready for the season. We ain't got long. We got a couple more weeks. November 25th, man, first game, we tipping off. So I was glad we're going to have a season, and hopefully everybody can stay safe and healthy where we can have a full season. So,
absolutely, man. Well, you stay safe out here, man. We appreciate you.
Y'all too, man. Hey, y'all love what y'all doing, man. Keep doing what y'all doing, man.
Absolutely, man. Take care, man.
All right, take care, boys.
All right.